I'm thrilled to be here with you in Blackhawk County. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for your passion. Thank you, Rod, for the incredible warm hospitality. Let me say to each and every one of you, thank you for sending Rod Blum to Washington. You know, the media said the first district was a Democratic district. And yet the men and women in this room said, no, it's the people's district. That's powerful. And what y'all did here in the first district in this last election is what we've got to do all over this country. You know, I want to start by introducing my wife, Heidi. She is beautiful and brilliant and an amazing businesswoman and an incredible mom to our two little girls. And she's my best friend in the whole world. And I love you, sweetheart. Our daughters, Caroline and Catherine, they're 4 and 6. And oh goodness is the right term for them. You know, I think back about 3 years ago when Caroline was just 3, Catherine was a baby. Oh. And we were vacationing. We were down at the beach with some friends, and they got some little girls too. And we were getting ready to all go out to dinner. And Caroline wanted to go in the car with her friends, and there wasn't space in the car with the friends. And so she promptly fell to the floor, threw a temper tantrum, began screaming and crying. I'm sure none of y'all with kids have ever had that happen. I'm pretty sure we did something profoundly wrong to cause it. Well, Heidi's pretty tough. And so she had, shall we say, a serious conversation with young Miss Caroline. And Caroline shaped up, and we went to dinner, and everything was fine. And we got back to the hotel room that night. And Caroline is saying her goodnight prayers. And she was on her knees, and she's looking up, and she goes, "Dear Jesus, tonight we had a situation."
That's so cute.
"And I'm not sorry, but it's not going to happen again."
That's so cute.
And you know that is why every one of us is here today. We're here today because we love our kids. We're here today because we love our grandkids. And we're here today because every one of us is concerned about the world that we are leaving to our kids and grandkids. I want to come to you today more than with anything else with a word of encouragement, of hope and optimism. We all know the challenges we're facing. You know, last week when we announced my campaign for president, in a 30-minute speech, I think I said the words President Obama once. We know what's going wrong. We're ready to turn the page. We're ready to move on forward. We're ready to turn things around. I want to talk to you about how we do that. Right now, today, for the first time in the history of our country, a majority of Americans believe our kids will have a worse life than we do. 65%. That has never been the case in the history of this nation until this moment right now. Maybe the most un-American idea you can imagine. And yet, I want to tell you, I am profoundly convinced we can together turn things around and we can reignite the promise of America. Now, what is the promise of America? The promise of America begins with the revolutionary idea that was at the founding of our nation, which is that our rights, they don't come from government, they come from God Almighty.
Amen.
Yeah. And that the Constitution serves, as Jefferson puts it, as chains to bind the mischief of government. The promise of America is that no country on earth has allowed so many millions of people to come from all over the world with nothing and achieve anything. That's who we are. The American idea for centuries was that our kids would do better than we did and their kids would do better than they did. That's the promise of America. The promise of America is that we are an exceptional nation that speaks with a clarion voice for freedom in the world, and that when America withdraws from the world is a much more dangerous place. And we know how to change all of this. We know how to bring all of this back. It's getting to the tried and to true principles that work over and over and over again, because they're true. I'm going to suggest three simple things to reigniting the promise of America. Number one, we've got to bring back jobs and growth and opportunity. We got to get back to an environment where the economy is booming and small businesses are growing. You know, right now, millions of young people are coming out of school, are facing mounting student loans, and wondering, am I going to find a job? What's next for me? How many countless young people have faded posters of hope and change on the wall?
Yeah.
As they're sleeping in their parents' basements.
Yes.
You know, there's a meme we put out online. It said, Reaganomics, you start a business in your parents' garage. Obamanomics, you move into your parents' garage. We need to get back and imagine young people coming out of school at a time where they get 2, 3, 4 job opportunities, where they have more and more opportunities to get training and a better future. Now, how does that happen? Well, we know how cause and effect plays out. Every time in history we've pursued the current policies, out-of-control spending and taxes and regulation, what do we see? Stagnation, misery, and malaise. And every time we follow the path of tax reform and regulatory reform, every time we pull Washington out of the way and we unchain small businesses to create jobs, we have seen extraordinary economic growth. We saw that in the 1920s. We saw that in the 1960s. We saw that in the 1980s. The two best levers are tax reform and regulatory reform. Tax reform, the enormous burden coming from Washington. I think the simplest and best tax reform, we need to move to a flat tax. Where every American can fill out his or her taxes on a postcard. And when we do that, we should abolish the IRS. Now, there are about 90,000 employees at the IRS. I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek. We ought to put a padlock on that building. Take all 90,000 of them and put them down on our southern border. Now, for our friends in the media, that was tongue-in-cheek, but think about it for a second. Imagine you traveled thousands of miles through the blazing sun. You swim the Rio Grande, and the first thing you see is 90,000 IRS agents. You'd turn around and go home, too. And then the second major lever is regulatory reform. Reducing the regulators that have descended like locusts on farms, on ranches, on small businesses, making it harder and harder and harder to make ends meet. The EPA coming in and calling a puddle in your backyard navigable waters. You know, I was out in West Texas once and I said, you know, the difference between the regulators and locusts is you can't use pesticide on the regulators. And an old farmer leaned back and he said, you want to bet? And the single most important regulatory reform we need to do is we need to repeal every word of Obamacare. A lot of politicians in Washington, sadly a lot of Republicans, that are resigned to never repealing Obamacare. They campaign on it every 2 years, but they don't actually have any intention of doing anything about it. I'll tell you how we get these done, is it's got to come from the people. If this next election in November 2016 is a referendum on repealing Obamacare, and abolishing the IRS.
Yes.
That's how we change the rules in Washington, and that's how we get it done. It's got to come from we. The second critical thing to reigniting the promise of America is defending our constitutional rights. Never have we seen a federal government so target the constitutional rights of law-abiding citizens.
Yes.
You know, this week we've been horrified to see the battle over religious liberty playing out in Indiana and Arkansas.
Yeah.
Now, I want to commend the legislatures in both of those states for standing up and defending the First Amendment rights of American citizens to practice our faith. And I'm sorry to say it has not been a profile in courage seeing some of the leaders running and scurrying, because the media has tried to vilify defending the religious liberty of Americans. You know, this is a nation that was founded by men and women fleeing religious oppression. And coming to America seeking a land where we could seek out and worship the Lord God Almighty with all of our hearts, minds, and souls, free of government getting in the way. We're right now facing an environment where the far left has decided that their political commitment to gay marriage trumps any commitment to the First Amendment religious liberty rights of individual citizens. And they want to use the coercive force of government to go after anyone whose religious belief teaches that marriage is a holy sacrament, a union of one man and one woman ordained by God.
That's right.
This is profoundly dangerous. You know, it was not too long ago when there was bipartisan agreement in favor of religious liberty. This used to be something Democrats and Republicans, we'd argue about marginal tax rates. But when it came to the First Amendment, everyone stood together and said, yeah, we stand for the Bill of Rights regardless of what party we're in. 20 years ago, Congress passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Virtually the identical law that Indiana and Arkansas just passed. Passed Congress almost unanimously. President Bill Clinton, a Democrat, signed it into law. That's the same law, by the way, that the news media is on every day saying, well, the people supporting this now are just crazy bigots. Defending religious liberty is not a fringe view. It is a basic American value. You know, last year I gave a long Senate speech on the floor Not that one. This was another one talking about religious liberty. The Democrats, sadly, last year in the Senate introduced an amendment to gut the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. They did it after the Supreme Court decided the Hobby Lobby case. The Democrats decided they were unhappy because the Supreme Court said the federal government can't use Obamacare to force a Christian company to pay for abortion-inducing drugs against the good faith religious beliefs of its owner. Democrats were horrified. They said, you better believe we want to force you to violate your religious beliefs. They introduced an amendment to gut that protection. There were 56 Democrats in the Senate last year. Do you know how many Democrats stood up and defended religious liberty? Zero. It was heartbreaking. I gave the speech on the Senate floor. I had a giant picture next to me of John F. Kennedy with a quote, I will not stand with a man who will not stand for religious liberty. I tell you, my dad turned on C-SPAN, saw me not next to JFK, scared the heck out of me. It's like, goodness gracious, he's gone native. But I said, well, what happened? Where are the liberals? Is it possibly the case that there are no civil libertarians left among Washington Democrats? Is there no Ted Kennedy? Is there no JFK? When did the Democratic Party declare a war on the Catholic Church? That is profoundly inconsistent with who we are. We need to defend our constitutional rights. We need to defend the First Amendment. We need to defend the Second Amendment. You know, Vice President Joe Biden. You know the nice thing? You don't need a punchline. I promise you it works. The next time you go to a party, just walk up to someone, say, Vice President Joe Biden, and close your mouth. They will crack up laughing 100% of the time. Well, Joe Biden said, if anybody attacks your house, just go outside with a double-barreled shotgun and fire both barrels in the air. Now, that is very, very good advice. If it so happens you're being attacked by a flock of geese. We need to defend the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. Our privacy. We need to keep the federal government out of our cell phones, out of our emails. And we need to protect the 10th Amendment. Or as President Obama calls it, the what? The fundamental protection that says the powers not given to the federal government are reserved to the states and to the people. Means their core responsibilities given the federal government that it needs to do and do well. It needs to protect this nation. It needs to support the men and women of the military. It needs to secure the border. But there are other areas that the federal government has no business sticking its nose, and chief among them is education. And we need to repeal every word of Common Core. Education's too important to have it governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. It needs to be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents have direct influence over the education of their kids. And third, we need to restore America's leadership in the world. For 6 years, we've seen the Obama-Clinton foreign policy of leading from behind. And it doesn't work. Instead of a president who boycotts Prime Minister Netanyahu, imagine America standing unapologetically alongside the nation of Israel. Imagine a president who stands up and says, "We will defeat radical Islamic terrorism." And we will call it by its name. And under no circumstances will Iran be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons. Now, these are common sense values. They're who we are as Americans. They're what we believe. As a result, in Washington, they're considered radical and extreme. And that means the only way we can do this, how do we reignite the promise of America? It won't come from Washington. The reason I am optimistic is because of each of you. The reason I'm optimistic is because we're spilling out into the other room and back into the hallway. The reason I am optimistic is because millions of courageous conservatives are rising up all over this country and saying, we've got to change the path we're on. We got to get back to the principles that made America great. That's where change comes from. It comes from the people. I'm optimistic because of the men and women here in this room. You know, how many of y'all have seen the movie The Usual Suspects? There's a line in that movie that says the greatest trick the devil ever played was to convince the world he didn't exist. It's a corollary to that. The greatest trick the left has ever played is to convince conservatives that America doesn't share our values. These are basic, common sense values. Every small town, every small business. This is who we are as Americans. And we have to get back to them and speak the truth. And let me give you some small illustration of the hunger that is out there. 9 days ago, I announced my campaign for President of the United States. Now, the fact that y'all came suggests to me that you don't read the New York Times. Because the New York Times said, Cruz cannot win because he is despised by the Washington elite. To admit my reaction, I wanted to Xerox that article and mail it to all 300 million Americans. I really wondered if I had to report the New York Times to the FEC for making an in-kind contribution to the campaign. All the mainstream media said, the Cruz campaign can't win because the Washington elite don't like what he's saying. And they control all the money. And money's everything in politics, so there's no way this campaign can raise the money it needs to win. Well, I'll tell you, we set out an audacious goal when we launched. We decided in the first week we were going to try to raise $1 million in 1 week. We thought that was a bold, aggressive goal that would be one heck of a statement if we can do it. I'm sorry to tell you, we failed. We didn't raise $1 million in a week. We raised it in one day. Within 72 hours, we had raised over $2 million. And on the 31st, 8 days into the campaign, the quarter ended. And we had raised over $4 million in 1 week. Percent of those contributions were $100 or less. They came from all 50 states. Over 43,000 people went to TedCruz.org. 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 And contributed online. I want to tell you something astonishing. Do you know that this constitutional conservative campaign has raised in our first week of the campaign more than any Republican nominee in modern times? We raised more in the first week of the campaign than Romney did in 2012. We raised more in the first week of the campaign than John McCain did in 2008. And the support, our friends in the media were right, it didn't come from the big lobbyists in Washington. They're all supporting somebody else. It came from the American people. That, I believe, is the path to victory in the primaries. But even more importantly, that is the path to victory in November 2016. That is how we turn the country around. We need to reassemble the old Reagan coalition. We need to bring together conservatives and libertarians and evangelicals and women and young people and Hispanics and Reagan Democrats. We need to bring together a coalition that's more than 51%, that it is standing for the shared values of America. That's what we're doing. Heidi and I are going to spend a lot of time here in Iowa asking for your support, standing in front of you, asking for you to march side by side with us, because if it comes from we the people, that is the way and it is the only way we will turn this country around. And I'm honored and humbled to have the chance to be with you and to stand with you to save this country that each of us loves so dearly.